Good morning and welcome to the August 21, 2023 meeting of the Chelan Public Utilities Commission. All five commissioners are present today and our council will be doing double duty today as acting general manager and general counsel Eric Wahlquist and Rebecca Newman is our clerk of the board. I would ask that each of you check your electronic devices to make sure they're placed in the silent mode to assist in not disrupting today's meeting. We do value public input at the meeting, and although I don't believe at the moment I see any public here, we will be providing an opportunity for the public to have input at the end of our morning session and at the end of the afternoon session. If you wish to speak, we ask that you provide your name and address for the record, as our meetings are recorded and we wish to have an accurate record of your input. We additionally ask that you limit your comments to 3 minutes. And additionally, if you wish to speak to any of the agenda items, I'll attempt to provide an opportunity for that at the end of each segment. Now, before we get to our safety minute, I just wanted, for the sake of those in the room, point out that you might notice something subtly but significantly different about the commission this morning. We sort of individually and collectively decided we need to set a new dress standard. And so expectations going forward. And now, if you believe this, we had photos taken this morning, so I'm probably fairly assured that some of us at least won't be wearing a tie at next meeting. So not to put the fear in anybody out in the room. So with that as
I definitely won't be.
Me either.
So with all of that said, our flag salute and safety minute this morning will be brought to us by Gage Breaka. Yeah.
I pledge allegiance to the flag, the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
My name's Gage Breaka. I'm with the safety group here at the PUD. I'm actually just starting week 7.
Ooh.
I came over from the west side, previously working with Sound Transit on their construction safety division. And before that, worked in Alaska in the oil field, and I was born and raised up there in Alaska. And I'm happy to be
sourdough.
Out here.
What's that? You're sourdough.
Sourdough?
Yeah. Sourdough Mining Company, too? No, I was supposed to call Alaskan.
Okay. Yeah. So today, for the safety minute, I'd like to speak about the back-to-school aspect. We're getting ready to have school start back up, and there's some reminders that we should all keep in mind as the school year begins. And so with the first bit here, we have the school bus safety. So it's important to remember, if you start to see the yellow flashing lights on the school bus, that they're getting ready to slow down, and we need to prepare ourselves to slow down as well. And then with that in mind, after the yellow flashing lights, the school bus will then pull out the stop bar. With that, we want to make sure we stay at least 20 feet behind the stop bar of the school bus, and then you wait until the stop signal is completely stopped, as in it'll roll the stop sign back into the bus, and then the bus will start to move, and then it's safe to proceed and drive forward. The other thing, when the stop bar is open, there's going to be kids either getting on or off the bus. And so you need to be particularly vigilant when kids are getting on or off the bus. At times they may be in a rush to get to the bus, running across the road at the last minute. I mean, they could act erratic, so we got to be vigilant and stay on our guard at that particular time. Okay, next slide, please. So then school zone driving safety. So as we all know, we need to obey all the traffic laws at all times, but particularly in a school zone, because there may be kids around. With the unloading and offloading, just stay aware. You know, look for any kids on either side of the road who may be coming last minute. If there's a school crossing guards at a street intersection, make sure you give them their due diligence. It's always a good idea to make eye contact with someone like that, because at that point in time, they may give you a visual signal, and they know that you're looking at them, and you can even confirm it with the wave, so they know that you did see them. The other thing with the school zone safety is that in the morning, sometimes the sunlight is low on the horizon, and it could particularly kind of be a little bit blinding. You may need sunglasses or a visor to help see better. And then at a time like today, where we have a lot of smoke, you know, we have reduced visibility, and there could be fog as well. But any reduced visibility conditions, it's better to drive on the side of caution, you know, maybe even have your foot hovering over the brake and be prepared to stop rather than over the gas. But the big thing is, again, we're just paying attention to the children and make sure we treat them safely in the area safely, so everything goes smooth and the kids go back to school. Thank you, everyone.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Gage.
Any questions?
Before you, I do.
Yeah, you bet.
Thank you for the school safety minutes, and I think there's a couple that you could add to that list. Just remember that administrators or teachers are in kind of a sense of shock as they drive back to school. And they're just not thinking well, so pay attention to swerving cars or cars that are not stopping. So I always, as an educator, wish that they had some rules, legislation or something that, you know, would stop the advertisement of commercials that's back to school, you know, get your school supplies, et cetera, because you're just walking into vacation and then the back to school advertisement starts. Anyway, just some humor, but thank you very much for adding that.
And Gage, I have to ask, based on your safety minute, which is very timely, very good, you might have a kid or two of your own that's going to school at this point? How?
I have a daughter who's turning five. Oh,
wow. Great. Yeah. Well, thank you for a great safety minute, and welcome to the utility. You made a really good first impression on this commissioner. I don't know about the rest. But.
Absolutely. Rebecca, would you mind going back up one slide? Where'd you find that one? Okay. Slightly disappointed, because if you see Mentor Day for DuBois, Wyoming.
Oh.
I'm from Wyoming, and so I'm like, who knows about that little small town not far from Jackson, Wyoming. So
yeah, it's out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, the snowmobiling days right there. But welcome, and is it you're the newest member, so you got the short end of the straw? You did an awesome job. Very good to meet you.
Okay. Right. Thank you. So the next item on our agenda is the approval of the agenda, and staff has recommended moving resolution number 10 to the consent agenda. Is there any any disagreement with that? Mm-hmm. If not, agenda item 10 will be moved to the consent, and we will move forward. We will start with item 3, the quarterly financial review and investment report with Mark Mullen and Dave Nelson.
Don't touch.
No touching. All yours. Thank you. Very good. Well, thank you, and good morning, commissioners. I'm Mark Mullins, Director of Enterprise Planning, Risk, and Analytics. And to my right is Dave Nelson, our Manager over Strategic Financial Planning. Today we'll be co-presenting the quarterly financial review for the quarter ended June 30th, 2023. And this presentation does support a number of resolutions that require quarterly reporting to the board on compliance with our long-range financial policies, our business line financial policies, our investment policy, as well as the board's balanced scorecard of maintaining our strong financial stewardship. So today we're going to cover our financial highlights. We'll look at our second quarter results, which is through Q2. We'll take a peek at our five-year forecast, our investment report, leave you with some key messages. This is an update only, no action required. There is a lot of information in the appendix, and we'll be more than happy to respond to any questions you might have on that, but we won't plan on covering that in the presentation today. So with that, our bottom line results through Q2, better than budget by $20 million. A couple of drivers, higher long-term contract revenues and lower operating costs, the combination of those two, more than offset our lower revenues due to lower stream flow conditions. From a forecast perspective, for the remainder of the year, we're expected to be better than budget by $16 million from a bottom line perspective. Operating revenues are expected to improve and come in slightly below budget. Just a reminder that we have a lot of capital and O&M spending that's planned for the remainder of the year. So a lot of projects that we're working on, and we'll see that spending occurring throughout the remainder of the two quarters. From a supply chain and inflation perspective, those do impact costs and schedules, but we're continuing to see those to be manageable. We continue to monitor those and we'll evaluate those. We do incorporate that into our business planning process as well as our budgeting processes, and then update those in the forecast as those occurrences happen with respect to inflation. We're seeing rising costs or adjusting schedules. From our financial metrics perspective, five-year forecast, we are meeting our targets, and we don't have any plans based on what we know today with our forecast to have any external borrowing during this forecast period. So looking at our income statement for Q2, from a revenue perspective, service revenue slightly above budget, weather-related, driving residential sales slightly higher. That's partially offset by lower cryptocurrency load year-to-date. On the net wholesale revenue, $36 million below budget year-to-date. The primary driver is lower stream flow conditions, which leads to lower energy production coming in at 76% versus budget. What we budget for is average water. So when we see lower stream flow conditions, we'll see lower energy production. And we do have a number of mitigating products that we have in our generation portfolio, slice products, which helps mitigate some of that stream flow risk that we have in our portfolio. But often when you have stream flow conditions that are lower, and especially as low as they are, that can often result in higher market prices as well. So there's a benefit to higher market prices. But also that impact on cost. However, also in our portfolio on the hydro contract revenue, our cost-based contracts, we do have a market-based element in one of our contracts where we retain surplus proceeds over and above the net costs, and we've retained surplus proceeds of $36 million year-to-date that offsets that net wholesale revenue impact. Also offsetting the net surplus proceeds, hydro O&M costs are lower. Our cost-based revenues are lower associated with that. Cost of production is about 81% year-to-date. From other operating revenue, $5 million above budget. A variable portion of our real-time agreement is the primary driver. That's another contract that we have that does benefit us when we have higher prices and higher volatility associated with the market. So overall for the year, we're forecasted to be about $4 million below budget for the year. On the expense side, operating expenses are coming in about $23 million below budget. Primary driver is lower O&M at the hydros, primarily due to project schedules, but we are forecasting some catch-up in those expenditures through the remainder of the year. From a non-operating net expense, $3 million better than budget. Higher interest rates are leading to higher interest income, which is the primary driver there. Total net expenses forecasted to be about $20 million below budget, which putting all those things together, from a bottom-line perspective, ending the quarter at $66 million, $20 million better than budget, as I mentioned, with the contributors being the hydro long-term contract revenues and lower expenses, and both of those more than offsetting the lower net wholesale revenue associated with the lower stream flow conditions. From a forecast perspective, as mentioned, expected to be $16 million better than budget based on what we know today. Ending the year at $109 million based on that forecast. $119 million, excuse me, based on that forecast. Looking at our balance sheet from a capital expenditure perspective, $85 million year to date. This is actually 110% above budget, $8 million above at this point in time through Q2. So there is a lot of spending going on there. We have some large projects. Some of the capital forecast adjustments that we have in our forecast right now is the operations and service center. Some of those expenditures that were planned for 2022 are carrying over into 2023 with some of those delays that we've experienced. also Powerhouse 1, B3 modernization. We've had some substantial payments in that project as well, and then some acceleration on the North Shore Chelan substation. Offsetting those increases, the jump-off ridge switchyard, this is the work associated with the large load in Malaga, and we both have impacts on the distribution side and the transmission side with respect to budget. And then the gantry crane work at Rock Island and Rocky Reach are also impacting that forecast. So overall, expected to spend $192 million, $26 million below budget for the year. From a cash perspective, our year-end balance was $540 million, drew down $9 million of that for a Q2 balance of $531 million as we continue to leverage that cash to pay down capital, make our planned scheduled debt payments, and then we also collected year-end receivables, which is also impacting that cash balance as well. Our year-end cash balance is forecasted to be $504 million or $90 million better than budget. From a debt perspective, we are right on plan with budget. Our Q2 debt balance is $330 million. We do have planned reductions over the course of the year, some which have occurred already, of $38 million, ending the year at $312 million from a debt perspective, again, right in line with budget. Any questions on the overview before I turn it over to Dave to get into some of the details?
Nicely done.
Thank you.
Commissioner Smith, I've got a tie in my desk drawer.
One on the back of my door, too.
I think I've got an extra for Mark, even if you want to take our pictures. They might have a little dust on them. Falling down here. Okay, so this pulls together our bottom line forecast for 2023. As Mark mentioned, a bottom line forecast of $119 million, $16 million better than budget. And you can see the net wholesale revenue is where we're at 62% of budget, below budget in the revenue area, and where the long-term contract has the retained surplus proceeds, which results in us being 116% of budget, offsetting that. Overall revenue, about $4 million below budget for the forecast. And our operating expenses at 95% with strong non-operating activity, resulting in the strong bottom line for the year. I would note the non-operating activity driven by both the interest, improved interest income due to higher forecasted cash balances than what we budgeted, as well as higher rates, and also an allocation. We have some budget of the unallocated PPB goes into this bucket, and we've got a note at the bottom of the page here just that we have now allocated some of that to some capital projects for the Loop Trail, Dryden Wastewater, and Riverfront Park capital improvements. And so that comes out of our forecast and actually ends up improving our results as that is now allocated to capital project instead of O&M. Mm-hmm. Looking at our individual business line, bottom line forecast, the integrated electric mirrors the overall district results, very strong at 114% of budget. Fiber and telecom, you see a smaller loss than forecasted due to lower forecasted O&M expenditures. Water is forecasting slightly improved results versus budget due to slightly better revenues forecasted, slightly lower O&M expenses, and a little bit of extra contribution income for new services. Wastewater is forecasting a positive bottom line due to PPB transfers. We had forecasted that at $1.5 million. That's been increased to about $2.2 million, and so that's why wastewater results are improved by those transfers, which are recorded as a non-operating income. And then the energy.
Dave, yeah. I got a question when it comes to the wastewater. is that consolidating all of our systems in one and then projecting this, so the PVB that went in to wastewater covers the Dryden expenses, right?
Right.
And then what about the Shasta and Wenatchee? Is that also covered with that same allocation?
So the allocation of the PVB is for the capital projects. Just the capital project at Dryden. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Yeah. And that's just the transfer. And so in our combined district results, those are all eliminated Those are inter-district, so they just get eliminated. But on the individual system results, as we're looking at water and fiber and wastewater results, we need to show those transfers.
Thank you.
And we've added some a note at the bottom of the page, this slide, just some bonus information here for you that kind of talks about that. And the integrated electric results include $4.2 million in non-operating expenses for PPB transfers. And that's $2 million to fiber and telecom and $2.2 million to wastewater at this point in the forecast. And fiber and telecom also includes $2.4 million in expenses related to the make-ready work, which are then offset. You see there is the positive bottom line for the inter-system elimination. So that's just a little clarifying information about how the results are impacted by those transfers.
And did the 2023 budget include the rate increases that went into play?
Yes.
In June? Okay.
Yes, the budgets include the rate, the planned and our forecasted rate increases, and then those are included in the budget. Okay, capital expenditures, as Mark noted, we're ahead of budget right now, year-to-date, at $85 million, 110% of budget, primarily driven by Rock Island modernization projects. You see Rock Island's at 160% of budget year-to-date, and the internal services, which is the operations and service centers in that category, at 149% of budget. For the full year, forecasting 88%, $26 million below budget. And again, that's driven by, as you can see in the electric distribution and network transmission, there's two projects related to the Jump Off Ridge switchyard and substation that reduce the forecast for distribution to 75% and network transmission to 30%, as it's a major part of the network transmission budget, that switchyard. Rocky Reach forecasting 65%, as Mark noted, due to the tail race gantry crane project being moved out to 2024. Rock Island, a lot of projects, a lot of work, a lot of moving parts there. Right now, we're forecasting 100%. There's still a lot of uncertainty of where exactly we'll come in there, depending on how those projects fall. Lake Chelan is forecasting 53% due to the auto closure gate being pushed out. You can hear more about that later this morning or today. Presentation on that project. Internal services forecasting 112% due to the Operations Service Center carryover funds from 2022 that weren't spent. At this point, we are anticipating coming back to the board and requesting a budget revision for that system, waiting to kind of get a little better handle on where all the projects will roll out on that, but would anticipate coming back and requesting approval for that later. Fiber and telecom, 90% of budget with a little bit slower expansion, and water and wastewater at 98% in line with their budget. It's a new slide we added. There had been some questions about our capital expenditures and history. We thought it would be worth sharing this information. This is the slide. The blue bars represent actual capital expenditures going back from 2011 through 2022, and the orange bars represent our initial capital budget for the year. So you can see the percentages have bounced around a little bit. We typically come in underneath what we budgeted, but we have increased very substantially the investments we've been making from $43 million, as an example, in 2011 to $141 million in 2022, at a peak of $165 million in 2021 there. So substantial investments occurring as we pursue our strategic plan of investing in our assets. Would note 2016, we can see we had 106% of budget, and of course that's the initial capital budget. That was driven by Powerhouse One modernization project, units B6 to 7, accelerating those years in that year. And we, of course, came back to the board and requested a budget revision, but we did end above our initial capital budget for that particular year.
And that's the only time that's happened in the recent.
That's right, yeah. We've had individual systems where we've come to the board and requested for systems. So in this case, we came and asked for a budget revision to the Rock Island system, which increased also, of course, the district's overall budget. So we have had a couple others where we've requested budget revisions to individual systems, but not the overall budget wasn't exceeded in any other years.
When I look at this from 2016 to 2022,
couple of years here that, you know, it's pretty big. And I was just wondering if, you know, if the COVID had a problem, you know, had impact on not achieving some of those projects.
Yeah, absolutely. COVID had a big impact on projects and slowed a lot of things down and slowed spending down, as there were all kinds of delays and things that happened related to that.
Yeah,
that
was definitely a factor. It looks to me that it has impacted a lot on our capital projects, and are now things have changed a little bit, and so are we going to see our expectation? Is that going to, that gap going to close a little bit, you think, over the next few years? Or,
you know,
forecasting it. So.
I think so, but there's also, it's also hard to predict a lot of these big, larger projects. And as you know, as I think what we've seen is as we've really tried to grow our budget, and we've really tried to increase our investment in a lot of these areas, there's a lot of challenges that come with that scaling up to be able to do that. And at the same time, we have seen COVID, we have seen supply chain challenges, right. We have seen inflation, and all those things impact our ability to.
I'm just looking at a perspective as we move forward with our capital projects, we're going to learn things as we move forward, and that should be, you know, something I think we could look forward to seeing this thing, you know.
Again. Yeah, absolutely.
Something. Because as we learn, we should be able to be more accurate on our.
Right.
Yeah, okay. I'll let you know too. All right, thanks.
Randy.
Yes.
I just got to tell you, I love this visual.
Yep.
Yep. You know, this really shows the investment that we've, and the increased investment that we're making in capital spending on the assets of our owners, on behalf of our owners. And this is very impressive to me. So thanks for putting that slide in there. It's visually impactful.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's helpful to look back sometimes and see that, you know, kind of comparison on a longer scale and focused in so much.
Well, and it also speaks to something that we don't talk about a lot in looking back. You know, I just did rough math in my head looking at this bar graph that you're talking about. And when you count this year, in the last 7 or 8 years, we've spent over $800 million on capital investment in our utility, and that without borrowing money. Mm-hmm. That's huge. It really is.
Yeah.
We're paying down debt as we go.
Yeah, we're paying down debt and still making investment.
Right.
That's just huge.
Yep.
That's
a good point. Yep. It's very, very good results for the district and very good for planning for the future. So,
Mark's even smiling.
Absolutely.
I'm looking at Kelly smiling.
Yeah, I
know. That's a good combination.
So looking at our cash flow year to date, our bottom line result is $66 million. We add back some non-cash expense items, depreciation and amortization at $28 million. We have some non-cash revenue items. We subtract out of $7 million, $87 million in estimated earnings funds from operations. We had $85 million in capital project expenditures, net debt activity of $19 million, $8 million in other balance sheet changes, a positive there with estimated use of funds of $96 million for a net use of funds of $9 million. We started with $540 million at the beginning of the year and now have $531 million. So looking at where those $531 are held, we have total liquidity compared to our policy minimum of $231 million of $427 up from year end of $420. I would note we still have $20 million in the strategic facilities fund. We've been using that money to fund portions of the operations service center and would expect that to be used up this year. The restricted funds for hydro capital and debt, as noted, were increased due to some internal loans to Rocky Reach and Rock Island. And that's to cover their planned capital expenditures over a 2-year planned period. Use some of those funds. We have bond reserve funds, which go up and down depending on our bond reserve requirements. And as we pay down debt, those come down. We used $5 million of the customer deposit from Microsoft on the Jump Off Ridge project so far. Looking at our quarterly financial policies, we're We're forecasting being in compliance with all of our policies throughout the five-year forecast period. I would note that the yellow means we're within 10% of those that metric. So the days cash on hand in the unusual case, we're still forecasting meeting the metric, but we are within 10% of it. And we just note that the combined debt cover ratio has really improved as we've paid down debt and had strong results, both impact that, and those are very, very strong numbers we're seeing there. And as you can see, the bottom line results, we're forecasting very strong bottom line throughout the forecast period, both in the expected and unusual. Mm-hmm. And in the debt outstanding, the expected case and the unusual both have the same numbers, as we would not anticipate borrowing even in the unusual case at this point. For our individual business line financial policies, we still have some mixed results, and we're working on getting these systems self-supporting. We see that for water and wastewater, these are targets for forecast for 2024, and we're not forecasting meeting those targets in 2024 for water and wastewater for the operating cover percentage. Fiber is meeting that, but is within 10%. And we're also forecasting having the debt service as a percentage of revenue higher than our plan for wastewater, which is really due primarily to different planning assumptions related to the Shasta loan that we maintain.
Question on that. It's the fiber says you're meeting those requirements. Is that with the PPB funds invested in that, or is that without?
This is an operating cover percentage measure, and so it does not include PPB fund transfers. Yeah. This is a different measure.
But capital, the growth of that does affect the
certainly,
the revenue
as
side
it affects
of it.
The revenues.
Sure. So as you increase that and use those funds as far as building out the capital and building out the,
right.
the structure, that does improve the overall revenue side.
Right.
So yes. That helps us meet. And I was just wondering if we did the same with these other entities, these other units, would that be the same result?
You know, it's a combination, because if your expenses are going up as you increase the system, you're going to see some increases in expenses also. So it's a common.
Yeah, but those were covered by the public power benefit.
Well,
on the capital side.
Right, on the capital side, right. But if you see some other expenses, there's often operating expenses associated with increasing a system size. So
it seems like it's working with fiber, though.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Okay,
this is a quarterly investment summary. The full report is included in the appendix. You can see that we're meeting most of our policy objectives and all of our compliance requirements. Our return on investment is still lagging, as we would expect in a rising rate environment. We've talked about that in the past. And as you can see, the district's return of 3.02% does compare favorably to a longer-term index of the U.S. S&P U.S. Treasury, 1-3-year index. So very good results in our investment portfolio. That brings us to the key messages. Our year-end forecasts are better than budget. Our year-to-date results are better than budget by $20 million. To forecast some slightly improved revenues and some catch up on operating expenses, and forecasting a bottom line better than budget by $16 million. Our long-term financial metrics remain strong. We do not have any external borrowing planned in the five-year horizon, while we maintain our substantial capital investment program. We are seeing supply chain and inflation impacts, but we do continue to build those into our forecasts and see those as manageable. Seeing these strong financial results really do continue to anchor the district's resiliency against those future uncertainties in project scope and schedule and rising costs. And we overall recommend staying the course, the long-term course on our strategic plan. That's our presentation. There is, as Mark noted, the appendix with a lot more numbers in it. And if you have any questions either today or later as you have a chance to look through those more, happy to answer those.
Question, Commissioner Berger.
One question on the appendix on page 26. I think it is. Yeah. I was looking at this, and not that one.
I can't see the.
It's your combined five-year forecast.
Maybe slide.
Anyway, you have a projection that goes out 5 years.
Okay.
And on year 26, it seems to, you know, it's sort of like a little outlier for me that says, well, what's going on there? Where, you know, you look at the numbers and everything seems to be kind of a consistent. And then you hit 26 and things stall. And, you know, if I can use that word. But it seems like the numbers are, you know, are down. I was just wondering, is that, what would cause that?
Well, I don't know that the numbers are so stalling so much. We have a number of things happening there. One thing we have, a off-system sales contract is rolling off in that year, so that's why the service revenue is so different.
Yeah.
You know, that, but that's offset, of course, by cost reductions in other areas. So that's not just a, that's not a profit line there, but I'd have to look in more depth as to specifically, you know, why that's, you know,
well, I was like, just reviewing it and I was looking at it and it just sort of jumped out at me, because as you're looking, you know, out at the forecast, that seems to be one of those.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest,
I thought I didn't know if there was something that caused that or,
yeah, the biggest jumps that we see and changes and things like that are related to changes in market prices. I mean, that tends to have the biggest impact in our outer years, as you know, high prices and forecast, and if prices are coming down in 2026 versus 2025, we'll see a decline in our revenue forecast. And as we work through our
is there something that goes on between 26 and 27? Because then 27 is the bomb.
Yeah. So I think also in 2026, there's another factor associated with the our new long-term cost-based contract that starts in 2026.
Okay.
So that was something that's new and different. So, and that's a cost-based contract, so the pricing mechanism is a little bit different than what we see in the net wholesale revenue. So there's an offset there. So you'll see the 2026 on the hydro long-term contract revenue go up pretty significantly, and you'll see the net wholesale revenue piece decline slightly. So that's where that offset is. So it's just shifting revenues to a different segment of the portfolio.
All right. It was just something that jumped out at me. And thanks for clarifying it. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.
Yep. Any other questions, comments? Great report. Very good. And Dave, I'd be interested in checking out that tie to see if we want to swap.
Thing.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you much.
Item four is quarterly energy resources update. Mike Bradshaw and Janet Jaspers.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Mike Bradshaw, Director of Energy Planning and Trading.
And Janet Jaspers, Director of Energy Planning and Trading.
And we're here to review the Energy Resources Quarterly Board Update. All right, so why we're here, an update on the wholesale energy-related revenue, what's going on in Western power markets, and an update on operations and planning. Some of the key points, you have just heard Mark and Dave describe kind of the lower water year, the different revenue pieces. We'll dive into those a little bit deeper. But some of the key points is that in 2023, it's been a well below average water year, and we had quite high energy prices. We have lots of different components that move around in that net wholesale revenue bucket. Some come down, that was like energy supply with lower water, but some other contractual mechanisms increase with higher prices. So, overall, the projection for 2023 is $160 million, which is $4 million greater than budget. Again, higher electricity prices, lower generation, and higher loads lead to the to a decrease, and then the offsetting contractual mechanisms provide the increase that brings you back up to $4 million above the budget. And a note, a Grand Coulee water supply for January through July, which is the inflow for our projects here, was 76% of average. A far cry from the 110% we had last year. Update on the Climate Commitment Act, the CCA. There is a allowance price containment reserve, kind of a special auction that was held on the 9th. There is the next regularly scheduled quarterly auction is the Q3 auction that comes up at the end of this month on August 30th. An update on pricing, that prices are continuing to trade near that $65 metric ton on the secondary market, which is roughly twice what California price is. And then an update on the day-ahead market initiatives. Again, we're keeping close contacts on these and shaping where we can the direction, given these are very important to the district. We are a long utility. We buy and sell markets. And if there comes a day where we are forced to join one, or we choose to join one, given that most of our counterparties are within the market, we want to keep our eyes on those. And so an update on what the two leading initiatives, which is SPP, Southwest Power Pool, Markets Plus, and the CAISO EDAM. So going back to revenues, this chart here is a forecast that goes out through 2032. On the left is 2023 budget, and next to that is the current 2023 forecast. Different colors here, tying back to different retail, or I'm sorry, to different revenue buckets. Local retail revenue is the bottom one. The second tier there is long-term hydro contract revenues. The gray is the off-system sales. That shows you see gray through 2025, and it stops there. Go back to that previous conversation. We have other revenue in purple, and then our EP&T net wholesale revenue in the top blue section. So that's the makeup of the bars. And then to kind of anchor back to where this was last quarter, the update, that's the red line on top, or that brownish line kind of going on top there. As you can see, the top of the columns line up pretty well with that, so not a ton of change between the last quarter and this quarter. And, of course, the green line is the budget, and all bars are still well above the budget. Diving in deeper to this year, net wholesale energy and other energy-related revenue, we have kind of itemized here. Again, this ties back to Mark and Dave's presentation on the financial update. On the kind of going line by line here, that third column over is the variance, which is handy to compare against how it compares to budget. You can see that roughly $37 million down from energy sales and purchases, primarily due to lower water supply, lower generation, a bit higher loads locally too. We have specified source premium, which is down 2.3, but that is actually offset by the line below that, 2.3. And so just a changing of the buckets there, the types of products sold. And so the subtotal for the top section is -$37 million. The other large number you'll notice as you kind of scan your eyes down is the long-term power contracts, retained net proceeds. I think Dave or Mark discussed that. That's offsetting of $36.2 million. And then as you go down to the line near the bottom for real-time revenue, that's $3.5 million above the budget. So when it's all said and done, that's about $3.5 million. The current forecast is above the budget forecast. Update on our energy commitments. This slide here is really to show that the district is within its hedging policy and its limits here. We have two tables. The left is for a fixed price position. The right is for a physical. Both tables show 2024 through 2028. The takeaway here is that the red line on top, which is our hedge limits, that we have surplus, meaning that we are below our hedge limits and we have room there. Update on fixed price size contracts. This is the same graph we showed last quarter. No change here. Have not executed any additional size contracts, but you can see starting in 2024, we'll be back up to 25% is where we've been historically, and then kind of ladder down as we go. Update on changes in the Western power market. So some of the bigger initiatives, the top one is the RAP, Resource Adequacy Program. Working a lot on business practices, kind of where the rubber meets the road, how this thing actually going to work, what's the details. So a lot of effort been putting into that. And then the testing of the operational program begins this November. So that'll be the first time that gets tested. Update on the CCA, mentioned that briefly, the Climate Commitment Act. Again, the APCR, which is a kind of a special auction that gets triggered if the previous auction clears at a price high enough. So there's thresholds that are set, and that happened. in the Q2 update. So, hence, there's this APCR auction that was held on the 9th. There was a little over a million allowances available to sell at two predetermined prices, one at $51.90 a metric ton and another price at $66.68, kind of a tier one price and a tier two price. All a million were sold. Again, half was at the lower price, half was at the higher price. Kind of get a sense of the supply demand. There's about 12 times the demand for the supply at that tier one price and about three times the demand for that tier two price. Next day, I think we saw prices go to $70 a metric ton. So a lot of demand, not a lot of supply. As I mentioned, the next regularly scheduled auction, the quarterly auction, is the end of this month, August 30th. Again, I give you an update on the price. It says 65. I think that's probably closer to 70 today. And then we'll also be going in, going through our emissions reporting. Emissions report for 2022 is due to Ecology on the 1st of September. So we're running through that math here. Locally, there's a template out there and instructions how to fill it out. And so we're running through that math. And it's the first time this will be submitted to Ecology. So we are working on that. And then update on the short-term markets. Again, just the markets development is the first bullet there is a markets plus. There's a phase one development meetings going on. Lots of subgroups have been enacted. Price formation, greenhouse gas accounting, seams issues, a lot of work going on. The intent there is to have the tariff filed with FERC in February of next year. So they're pushing hard for that. Second one down is EDAM. The draft's been out, comments have been put in, and they're shooting for, at least as of recently, was the end of this month. So that could be very, very soon, but that would be filed with FERC. And then a newer development was the Western regulators from Arizona, New Mexico, but mainly Oregon, Washington, and California sent a letter to YREB and CREPSI looking for a market that calls for an entire Western market, including CAISO. Under independence, I'm sorry, including California, under independence government structure. So that was sent out a couple weeks ago, and so that's another avenue that's being discussed in the industry.
Is there a reason why that's Arizona is part and part?
I don't have a great answer for that outside the fact that Desert Southwest entities, I think, are looking for independence governance.
Okay.
And a market that has that.
Okay. Got you.
All right. And with that, I'll hand it to Janet.
Thanks, Mike. So we also watched natural gas prices pretty closely just because the natural gas generators are often the ones who set the incremental pricing for electricity. And so this chart is just showing the daily natural gas prices at several Western hubs plus Henry Hub. Sumas is the closest to us, and you can see how it's been pretty low and flat recently, kind of popped up a little bit in later July. And then SoCal CityGate, just some shortages they had, their pricing kind of popped up just over $10 for a couple of days. Taking a look at the September contract for Henry Hub, you can see that it last quarter when we were here was $2.60 per MMBTU, and more recently dropped kind of over the time frame up and down, but it dropped 2 cents since we were here last quarter. And taking a look at this chart, this chart is really just this yellow box. This chart goes back to 2002, so you can just kind of see historical. So back in 2006 and 2008, really spiked up close to $14 per MMBTU. And so what we're seeing real recently is quite a bit less than that, a whole lot less volatile than it has been over time. Switching gears to electricity pricing, we're showing 6 years of pricing. On the far left is 2023 pricing. And on the y-axis, we have dollars per megawatt hour. last time we were here is the solid blue line. The current price forecast is the solid black line. So if you kind of want to take a look at those over through 2028, they're almost on top of each other. So not much movement since last quarter when we were here. You can see that this year, Q3 really is quite high, up over $150. Last week, we did see prices just under $1,000 trade for just a real short time period when California and the whole West had high heat. 2 days later, the market was back to $62 a megawatt hour for day-ahead trade. So pretty short-lived, but we can still see pretty high price spikes. Switching gears to Lake Chelan, lake level page. It's summertime, everyone wants to hear about the lake and the lake level. We're starting to get more influx of calls. So what's the lake going to be like in September? We're trying to book a vacation. So,
do you refer them to the app?
I refer them to both the app, the current app, and to this page. So, yes. Depending on if they call, it's usually the app. And if they email, usually we send them to this page and talk about the app, too. We're currently 0.2 feet above the target curve. And you can see out this time frame, the range for the current operating year is this peach color. And so very tight operating range. After Labor Day weekend, we do have a target elevation, and then in September, we start drawing the lake down kind of gradually and pretty steep in September and November. So, in summary, I think Mike, Dave, and Mark had talked about net wholesale revenue being down just because of the low water, 76% at Grand Coulee. In your appendix, there's slide 20 that shows Rocky Reach is probably more, a little bit more closer to 74 or 75% of normal just because of the side streams. There are some pieces of our portfolio that increase and some are decreasing, but overall, $4 million better than budget. And as Mike had talked about, the Climate Commitment Act, we're seeing really high allowance pricing, double California, and possibly even higher with this next auction. Lots of demand. Lots of demand, not that much supply. And then just the market initiatives, just keeping a real close eye on both options at this point. You know, I think we're going to probably have to join one or the other. So we're watching both and being involved in the rulemaking so we can make a really informed decision if and when the time comes. So that concludes our presentation. We'll take questions. There is an attached appendix that does have some additional information that we didn't go over. But if you have questions on the presentation or the appendix, you can ask now or later.
Got one question.
Commissioner Bergeron.
Page 9. Talk about the Henry Hub. I'm just curious, what affects the Henry Hub? I mean, you have a pretty much consistent line. It actually goes down on this graph, and it seems like the others are all just up and down. What makes that a consistent line?
So the NYMEX gas contract is based on Henry Hub, and so that's kind of the standard. The one pricing that the NYMEX contract is based on that location. In the West, there's different locations, so there might be congestion in the pipelines or some storage goes out, Alyssa Canyon goes out or something. So there's definitely congestion, maybe a pipeline from Henry Hub to some of these other places. So it's kind of localized production.
Would that be because of like firming of green energy and that kind of stuff where it has to come on and off and it affects the market? I mean, Henry Hub's pretty
supply on Texas, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Then on the West Coast and probably not as congested and localized pricing If a pipeline goes out in one area, you might see it just spike up.
Well, but I was just curious. They just rely more on natural gas in those areas than as far as firming and in demand.
Demand is high. I think just production at those little hubs is a lot lower.
Just curious. I mean, look at that. Just, okay, well, that's interesting. Anyway, thank you.
Any other questions? Interesting, the one slide you put in the appendix was predicting weather for the next 90 days, which we're still going to be dry.
We're saying Hurricane Hillary could drop moisture in Idaho, last I heard, but not Washington.
And being warm, forecasting warm, but warm in September, October, not the same thing as being warm in July and August either.
Shorter days.
Yep.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Still do not see any public other than the media in the room at this time. So, no, I don't think there's. I'll call for public comment. So should we just start moving through the?
We have some flexibility, Commissioner. I think we can move right through the consent agenda. We do have. Larry's here, I see, for Resolution 11. If we need that, we have at least one manager item, hopefully somebody up here at about 11 to do that. Then I think there's flexibility among the board if you want to pull up
commissioner
items and try to reserve the rate 36 until after lunch in case folks show that's what we'd planned for.
Right. We might end up breaking a little early for lunch. So, okay, let's move on through. Commissioners, we have a consent agenda before us, which we modified earlier to include resolution number 10. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
And I'll second that motion.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion is passed. And we are on to...
If you're on to resolution 11. Thank you, Commissioner. We'll take them out of order then. Resolution, have Larry Cordes here for resolution approving a budget revision, bid advertisement, and award of a contract for signature for Lake Chelan Power Tunnel Isolation Systems, bid number 2212725. Larry, thanks. Thanks, Larry. Thanks, Rebecca.
Great. Thank you. I was here a few weeks ago for an amendment to our design agreement for this project. And at that time, I mentioned I'd be coming back for a budget amendment and a resolution to advertise and move forward with the project. So this is the Lake Chelan Power Tunnel Isolation System on your... within the district's budgeting, it's known as the LC Seismic Study Auto Closure Gate. And to start out, I thought I'd just give you a quick little overview of the project objective. This slide shows the intake to the power tunnel at Lake Chelan Dam. And at the moment, you can see the grading right there. How we isolate this power tunnel is we drop stop logs in that slot. It's a pretty extensive project. We have to bring a crane onto the deck and get a crew lined up. And it takes a few days of effort and planning. We're intending to replace that approach with a drop gate structure. And what's kind of developed with the design of the drop gate structure is that by way of FERC reviews and some other inputs to the project, our seismic loading changed. And on the left shows the original concept. And this is a viewpoint. The pictures I showed previously was kind of looking parallel to the dam. This viewpoint is if you come upriver and you're looking down on the dam, and that slot is right below this gate, the gate structure right there. So on the left here, this original design concept had the whole hoist sitting up on the top of the structure, and the gate sits in here, goes up and down into that slot. Due to the seismic changes, this whole concept on the left was very top-heavy, so we're changing and moving our hoist down to the deck level, and we'll have a series of shivs, which are pulleys, that come off the hoist over the pulleys, and then we'll raise and lower the gate into the intake slot. So that design challenge really has impacted our schedule. It's impacted our budget. The budget impacts were due as much to the time frame that it's taken to work out this design change, and that there were some real substantial construction cost escalations during that period. Roughly 3 years, essentially. So this kind of outlines our cost increases. We had an original capital funding budget of $3.85 million. Due to the construction cost escalation, some other refinements in our design, we're looking at an addition of about 1.5. A few weeks ago, we added design fees of $81,700, and we've got a rough contingency in there of about $500,000 on top of that. So we're requesting a total revised project budget of $6 million. And our schedule, this project is tied real close to the to having the power tunnel isolated and out of service. So there's a lot of planning. We were hoping to do it this April 2024. Do the project, but due to our schedule slip, there's a lot of lead time required for that gate, that big fabricated steel gate. So we're going to push the actual installation back to April 2025 to coordinate with that power outage. To make all that happen, we'd like to advertise here real soon, September, October at the latest, 2023. Because we know that right as soon as we can get a contract in place, which would probably be right after the first of the year, we have to start ordering all of our equipment and getting everything fabricated and lined out. We can start in 2024 with some actual construction on the site. There's a bit of site work associated with the project. We're getting a new generator. We're doing a few other things just grading-wise around the dam side on the upstream side there. Downstream side. So we will be working during the construction season of 2024. The big effort, the focus of the work is 2025, when we'll tie everything together and coordinate it with that April 2025 outage, and hopefully have everything buttoned up by July of 2025.
Larry, I've got a question for you.
Yep.
Tell me the generator. I didn't understand what that is. That a backup type thing for the operation, or help me understand that.
Yeah, correct. Because we're putting a new electrical component on the site, which is our hoist, which is opening and closing the gate, the existing backup generator we have is undersized.
Nice.
So we have to get a new, bigger backup generator.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
And then associated with that, there's some we have to change kind of our site layout and the building configuration right down there. So.
Great. Thank you.
And with that, then, the kind of the key points of the resolution, then, is that we'd like to have authorization to advertise here real soon, hopefully mid-October at the latest. And then with the bids that we'd get, we'd like authorization to award and execute a contract when we know we've got our 15% constraint within the engineer's estimate. And to see the project through, we think we want to, we're requesting that we get the budget bumped up to $6 million.
Gary. Can you go back just to a couple of slides to where you're showing the gate? Thank you. So help me just to understand, that's a one-piece gate. There's not multiple pieces to it, right? It doesn't have to come out and lay down anywhere.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. That's all I wanted to know. Thanks.
And it's steel, and it's how big?
It's steel. It, rough dimensions, 16 feet by 16 feet and 30 tons. It's a small gate, though. I mean, you know, comparison to what we deal with out at Rock Island, and it's a small gate, but still a big thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
That puts it in perspective.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions?
I just have one thought. You know, can you go back to where you had the crane? You have just a portable crane that comes in to assist on this, right?
At the moment, right, the way we do it at the moment.
Which seems awkward to me. And if I remember correctly, some time ago, this was one of the previous commissioners, we had an accident with that with a crane. Is that similar to what that accident was when they it was a dangerous thing that happened there. It tipped over, if I recall, and I don't know if this was the same type of a situation. But
it was a crane. It was on the Lake Chelan deck. I don't know if it was doing this particular task.
Yeah, but it is another crane that had to move in to do that, and it seemed to be some, you know, if you're not trained on everything exactly the way it is, it can cause, you know, damage.
Correct.
And so, and safety hazards. So I just look at that, and it spurred a memory I had where we had an accident, so it seems kind of awkward to be bringing those in like that. Anyway, that's perspective.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, commissioners,
thanks, Larry.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you. Since we're, if we agree to the request of management, which I think we should, we could act on Resolution 11 right now and hold Resolution 9 till after lunch, and then move on to manager items and commission items. So, does that meet with everybody? So, I would entertain a motion to approve Resolution 11.
I move to approve resolution number 11, approving budget revision bid advertisement award and contract signature for Lake Chelan Power Tunnel Isolation System bid number 22-12725.
Is there a second?
Second?
No. Commissioner Allen has set a new standard for how we make a motion on, and I like that, so that's good. Thank you. No, hearing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Manager items.
Thank you, commissioners. I think we're going to start. We have Chad Bowman here to update you on some of the progressive design build work we see coming here in the future and our continued efforts to achieve self-certification status with the state. So, Chad, thanks.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, commissioners. I'm Chad Bowman. I'm the Interim Director of Engineering and Project Management, and I wanted to provide, as Eric said, an update on the status of a progressive design build application that we've recently submitted to the state. As you probably recall, I was here with Casey Hall last April, where we received, I think, your head nod or consent to move forward with that application process. So we've done that. It's taken us a bit longer to get to the application process than we anticipated in April because we've done a deep dive into the 15-year program for substations and transmission lines, made sure that the application is aligned with our financial forecast. As a result of that, like I say, we recently submitted an application that only includes a 5-year horizon for those projects, and the application is really split into two parts, one for substations, one for transmission lines. We took both of those actions really in response to some feedback we received from our consultant that's helping us with this effort. And as Eric also mentioned, right, during that 5-year time frame, we would anticipate applying for what the state calls design build agency certification. At what time, if we receive that, the district will have the ability to self-determine contracting methods for various projects, including these alternate delivery methods proposed here. The applications, because there are two, do have the flexibility to bundle work where it makes sense. So if you have a substation and a transmission line project that are just naturally one project, you can bundle those together. There is no obligation to perform any of the work that we've applied for this alternate contracting method, even if we receive approval to do so. We can still use our traditional design, bid, build process if desired. So the application includes, like I say, the substation. Some of the project types included in the application are the substation build program that I'm sure you've heard about, the transmission, significant transmission line work, Plain, Lake Wenatchee, wildfire resilience is probably a notable project that's included in the application. And then there's also, you know, some more speculative projects, like should we get another new large load application, we could potentially use this alternative contracting methodology to deliver those projects. So altogether, the work in those two applications totals a little bit less than $110 million over the next 5 years. And like I say, those applications were submitted today, one last Friday. The next step is a presentation to the state's Capital Project Advisory Review Board at the end of September, on September 28th. So that's where we're at on this effort. Like I say, wanted to provide an update and see if you had any questions.
Commissioner? Gary.
More of a comment than a question, and that is that, as I recall, we were sort of on the leading edge of these design build contracts, and they've been quite successful and have worked out very well for the district. So I'm excited to hear that we're continuing down that road and using those types of contracts going forward. So good job.
We're excited as well. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, we seem to have be plowing some good ground with this process.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the update.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Chad. Commissioners, the only other manager item for today is mine, to let you know that your quarterly project reports did go out in your board packages. And if you have any questions or concerns as you review those, feel free to reach out to me or Rebecca or Kirk, and we'll make sure we can shepherd any answers back to you. That's what I have for manager's items today.
Do we have any commissioner items today?
I would just share that Carnan and I went with Justin on the 10th of August to the INEAT City Council meeting, where they did approve the addendum, which of course came with an increased monetary contribution from the PUD for their museum and park system. It was a pretty well attended, I thought, the city council meeting, and a lot going on in INEAT. Oh, and on another note, I know I've shared with you guys, but I met Senator Cuff, Mike Cuff, from Montana when I was at Penware, who invited me to to Libby, Montana, where I get to tour the Libby Dam. It's very involved in the whole Columbia River system, and so we're going to go out on the boat and take in the county fair at Libby, Montana this weekend. Woohoo!
Good for you.
That has a rodeo, if you
right, a big bull riding event.
Wow!
I will not be participating. Spectating.
That sounds cool.
That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And full of information, I'm sure.
Absolutely. He's very involved in the Columbia River Treaty, and so I'm excited to chat with him.
Good job.
Spend time with him. Yeah. Thank you.
You bet. Any other commission items? follow up on any?
I don't have any to follow up on from prior meetings. Today's delegation, I have actually none. That's based upon an assumption that Commissioner Bergeron's questions regarding the combined five-year financial metrics, you don't have any questions that are still lingering after the answer you received. Beyond that, I have nothing from today so far.
Okay.
No, he answered what I wanted.
Great.
I thought there was
okay. I had assumed that, but I did want to clarify.
Thank you.
I don't have anything else from today.
Okay.
Which I actually, and we will not have a need for an executive session today.
We will not.
So I have nothing if the board wants to wait until 1 o'clock to do the rate resolution conversation. We're probably at the end of this morning's work. If you choose to pull that up into the morning, then we can do that. But you would not allow time for anybody who had made arrangements to come down.
You know, given that there was, you know, one of our customers that was here expressing some concern, seems that probably the most appropriate is to have an extra long lunch hour and come back at 1 o'clock. Okay. So we will then recess and reconvene at 1 o'clock.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. We're reconvening our August 21, 2023 board meeting of the Chelan Public Utilities Commission. We have one item left to cover, I believe, on the agenda, and that is agenda item 9, a resolution establishing new terms of service for rate schedule 35 and new rates in terms of service for rate schedule 36.
Thanks for reading that, Commissioner. Lindsay's got us today.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Lindsay Mons, Business Advisor, Business Manager, Customer Utilities. Thank you for taking this after lunch. We thought we'd hold it just in case there was any members of the public coming, but I don't see any of our customers here. So hopefully that means positive things for today. Today's presentation is a resolution request associated with the series of presentations that we've had in the last few meetings on the high density load and cryptocurrency rate change, which we are actually now calling the data center and similar loads rate. So we'll cover a little bit of where we've been, talk about public comment, and then leave it to you for discussion. So our outreach plan, we started this earlier this summer in July, talking about the rate proposals. And also held a public hearing at our last board meeting. During that period of time, we've collected public comment. The record's been open for customers to provide us their feedback and thoughts and opinions on the rate. And then today, based on our outreach schedule, is our proposal for resolution. Of course, this is up to the board. If you need additional time to consider or discuss with constituents, we do have time, plenty of time in our schedule for any of that. We have a proposed effective date for this rate, not till February. So based on our deployment of meters in the AMI areas, which would be needed for this rate, as well as the work that's required on our IT systems to program the rates, we felt like that was a comfortable time period. Gets us through the holidays as well for those period of time for customers. Just a reminder of the proposal that was on the table, or is on the table, and it would be a revision to rate 35 and 36 class applicability, combining all of the data center use, whether it be computer processing, cryptocurrency, any of those types, into the new high density or the new data center and similar loads class of 36, and removing those data centers from rate 35. We would update the rate energy calculation charge for the rate 36, which is the data center class, as well as implement the various risk mitigation measures that we've talked about at previous board meetings. For this proposal, we heard two customers speak at our last board meeting, so the commission is well aware of their thoughts on the rate. We've also received several comments in writing, which I believe have all been forwarded to the board as well. Majority of those were in support of the proposal. I do have a note here that we did receive one email representing a group of customers that was concerned about how this might impact or be a foretelling of what might be to come for other rate classes. And I just wanted to take the opportunity to remind the board that when we first started looking at rate 35 and 36, the whole objective that the board gave us was to establish rates for a group of customers that would allow them to operate within our service area without having an impact on our other customers. So to ensure that we didn't have cost shifting or other things that would create rate issues or other problems for our customers. And that's where really the two different rates were born from. And we did continue with that in this rate revision time period. So with this look at the rates to say, is it doing what we thought it was doing? Is it doing what it's supposed to be doing? That was, again, one of the key components of our evaluation. So I'll pause there in case there's any discussion or questions that anybody has on the feedback or anything. So I guess with that, within your packet was a proposed resolution associated with rate 35 and 36 for consideration today. Happy to address any other questions you might have. If Eric has
commissioners, any questions?
Well, I'd like to make the motion so that we can move into discussion. And
okay.
So I'd like to make make a motion to approve resolution number 10, authorizing amendment to number six to services agreement, SA number, resolution establishing new terms of service for rate schedule 35 and new rates and terms of service for rate 36.
And that's
resolution number nine.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? If there's no discussion, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Vote. Opposed? The motion is carried. Thank you, Lindsay.
Thanks, Lindsay.
Thank you.
It's been an interesting process.
Thank you, Lindsay.
So is there any other business to come before the commission?
I have none today. Commissioners, thank you.
Hearing none, we will stand adjourned.
Thank you all very much.